Learn live in the classroom at Online Trading Academy's Financial Education Center in Bellevue. You'll have access to state-of-the-art workstations where you can learn on a professional trading platform. Text Cairo to 57682 to register for a free half-day workshop and learn more.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Oh, I have so much to get to. As we steamroll into the 2 o'clock hour, let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
I'm a little incredulous about, you've had this in your newscasts a few times, but this Move Seattle levy that is a little over budget. They're not able to complete the projects that they promised to the voters. And I've talked about this a lot, that we had the Sound Transit scam back in 1996, which is billions of dollars over budget, phase one, billions of dollars over budget, and now 12 years behind schedule, phase one of Sound Transit. But they said, if you vote for us, if you give us billions of dollars, traffic will get better. And they were lying in those ads because their own environmental impact statement admitted traffic wouldn't get better. But they needed to say that to sell this lie to the voters of the region. And if you want truth on stuff like this, you listen to my show. Sound Transit 2, same thing. Vote for this. Traffic will get better. Sound Transit 3, most expensive local tax in the history of the United States of America. $54 billion. Vote for this. Traffic will get better. And then, 2015, the Move Seattle levy, $1 billion. Vote for this. Traffic will get better. And amidst all of this, they say, oh, we got to toll downtown Seattle. We got to add tolling on every road in downtown. But if we do that, traffic will get better. I mean, I can't believe what chumps voters are around here. But now we're getting details on the billion-dollar Move Seattle levy. And what they now say is that the Seattle Department of Transportation wasn't prepared to execute projects on the scale that the levy and the city promised. Now, what does this do? This gives me a big fat I told you so, because from the first time I interviewed him, and then I had sources who were sitting in on meetings that he was a part of, I told you Scott Kubley, the head of the Seattle Department of Transportation, was almost criminally in over his head. And we had him on the show a couple of times, and I'm sorry that I have to keep playing this card, and I'm not the smartest guy in the world. Although I did get some exciting news when Stephen Hawking passed away. I am now in the top 10, but I'm not the smartest guy in the world. But the people who are elected or appointed to public office around here, I don't know if we even meet the average of 100 IQ. Scott Kubley, it was just very evident to me that Scott Kubley is not a very bright man. From our couple of conversations, and then, as I said, I had people who were in meetings with him, and they said they've never seen a public official so far over his head. Now, what Scott Kubley was really good at, with the help of all of Seattle politics and Puget Sound area politics, he was really good at scamming people out of millions, or in this case, hundreds of millions of dollars. Now we have the proof. As the Seattle Department of Transportation today is telling us, the agency was not prepared to execute projects on the scale the levy and the city promised. In other words, they lied to the voters, said, vote for this, give us $1 billion, traffic will get better, and oh, we have an incompetent man running the department. But listen to some of these numbers that we're getting this afternoon. The levy, this is one of the craziest financial schemes I have ever seen. In a region that is jam-packed, wall-to-wall, shoulder-to-shoulder with financial insanity and corruption, this might be the most insane and corrupt ever. The levy said, we're going to build some bike lanes. They will cost $860,000 per mile. Now, that alone is insane. $860,000 a mile for a bike lane? Yeah, that's bad. But the reality was a little worse. The four-block extension of the 7th Avenue bike lane has cost $3.8 million for four blocks. That works out to $13 million per mile. I want you to think about this. They told the voters it'll cost $860,000 a mile. The reality is $13 million a mile. And we get back to the core foundation of my frustration. First of all, do you think that's an accident? Do you think it's mere incompetence? Or is it criminal corruption? Who do you think's getting these millions and millions and millions of dollars? What contractors? What labor unions? What special interest groups? What bicycle clubs are getting the money that has been stolen from taxpayers? Will people go to prison? No, because this is just accepted. This is just par for the course in our region. But we do have criminally corrupt, incompetent liars who are running our region. And you see the results of that. You see it with heroin needles everywhere, with homeless people everywhere, with car windows smashed everywhere, with home invasions everywhere. You see it with teenage girls getting murdered down in Burien. You see it with dogs getting poisoned by drugs up in Bothell. All these stories that I've covered. We have criminally corrupt, incompetent criminals running this region. But, hey, we voted for it, right? We gave them the money. We believed them this time. We're Charlie Brown and they're Lucy with the football. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
And then there's another significant issue. Here in Seattle, they want a business tax so that they can give $75 million a year to labor unions and drug addicts. But our friends at Cairo 7 News, they had a fascinating feature last night. The decisions made in Seattle are going to affect the entire Puget Sound region and the entire state. That you, if even if you don't live in Seattle, even if you don't come into Seattle, as a taxpayer in our state, you are going to be affected by criminally corrupt, incompetent criminals who are running Seattle. Bruce Kendall is with the Tacoma Development Board, and he says, well, it'd be great if the businesses left Seattle and came down here to Tacoma, but...
If they're interested in the South Sound, there are opportunities here for them. They might decide to flee the state of Washington altogether or sell themselves to another company that's out of state. That's a big risk to all of us.
Home Street Bank is a local bank, been around for I don't know how many decades and decades and decades. Mark Mason is their CEO, and he said, yeah, we started in Seattle. We're a Seattle company, but we're probably going to have to get out.
If this goes as planned, would you consider moving some of your people out of Seattle?
In fairness, we already have. We have large facilities in Federal Way and Linwood, which are much less expensive from an occupancy and cost of doing business standpoint.
And Cairo 7 News also talked with commercial real estate people who said, yeah, we're seeing this. You know, we haven't felt it all yet, but we're seeing this, that companies are moving out.
I know firsthand that the very discussion of this measure has redirected companies looking for space in Seattle to the east side, and has already caused existing Seattle companies to plan their expansions there. This is not speculation. It's already happening.
Oh, and how about the poorest workers that the city council pretends to care about as part of their lying corruption? Hotels here, they said, we've got to step up robotizing our staff because human staff's becoming too expensive in Seattle. This guy, Richard Hills with the Seattle Hotel Association.
Our industry also looks at believe it or not, robots delivering in-room dining, automated check-in. We don't want to be an industry of computers. We want to be an industry of people.
Yeah, but they can't afford it in Seattle. You can't afford to be a people industry in Seattle. And so on and on it goes. And then I want to talk to this guy. I enjoy getting Roger Valdez on the show. And he's got some fascinating insights about what they're going to do with this money if this business tax for drug addicts and labor unions actually goes through.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Well, there was a rather heated city council meeting on Monday evening because, as you know, as we've been talking about for months, the city council is proposing a major tax on business. They say for homelessness. I have my doubts. Let me welcome to the show. He's the director of Seattle for Growth. His name's Roger Valdez. Roger, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, I know that you have a lot of skepticism about this proposed business tax that's going to raise $75 million a year. What concerns do you have about it?
Well, my concern about it is that they're going to take $75 million a year. And as one of the speakers the other night said, you know, like Albertson's grocery stores, for example, many of them operate at a loss already. We've got minimum wage rules. We've got paid leave requirements. So some of these grocery stores, for example, are going to shut down in areas where there's a lot of poverty and people that have no access to grocery stores. And we talk about food deserts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this tax is going to basically make them shut down their losing, stores that are losing money. And so I'm concerned about the effect it's going to have on the consumer, you know, the person that's actually out there, the customer, that's going to see prices go up or places shut down and move away. More importantly, though, what are they going to do with the $75 million? They say they're going to build 1,700 and some housing units in 5 years. Think about this for a second. There's 8,500 counted homeless people in the city. In 5 years, they're going to build 1,700 units with $75 million a year.
A year.
So they're going to shut down grocery stores, put people out of business, and produce 356 units a year, maybe. It's absurd.
Well, this
in other words,
this isn't about homelessness at all. I watched this meeting.
No, it's about punishing businesses.
Well, it's about more than that, though. It is about rewarding labor unions. And I watched the city council meeting, and I saw steel workers and other union members getting up. And this is not about human compassion, and it is not about getting people off the street. And I mentioned on my show earlier this week, I'm also tired of the catch-all of homelessness, which can include the
right.
Mom who's getting away from a domestic violence situation, who we can and should help. And it also includes the chronic drug addict who's made this his lifestyle of choice. And I'm getting really sick and tired of this city grouping all of those people together under the one banner of homelessness.
Right. And I think most people would be willing to pay a tax if it would reduce the number of people that are counted, 8,500. Let's say within 2 or 3 years, it was down to 2,000, for example.
Yeah, but
I think people would say,
I don't mean to interrupt you. I don't mean to interrupt you, but we are paying a tax. We're paying $200 million a year to Seattle and King County already, and the problem's getting dramatically worse the more we spend. So I would say that not only do people not mind paying the tax, but they've also been taxed to the hilt already for, you know, giving money that clearly is doing nothing to impact the so-called problem.
Right. And I mean, and this is just an extension of that. I mean, the absurdity of it is that they talk about cost burden households. There's 29,000 households that are paying too much, you know, more than 30% of their monthly income for rent. If the average is about $300 or $400 a month, for example, you know, somebody's paying $900 a month and they should be paying $600. If we gave people $300 a month every month per year, it would be about $95 million. So you'd wipe out that cost burden just immediately.
Yeah, but the money wouldn't be directly funneled to the labor unions, which is truly what this is all about.
Right, but if people could just submit a simple application and say, here's how much I pay for rent, here's what I earn every month, and they were $250 short on rent, you know, based on the standard, you could just pay that rent. You could just cover their rent for a year. and it would be a lot less than what we're paying now. And what the Lorena Gonzalez is saying is basically, all these people are struggling to pay rent every month. My solution to it is to tax businesses, put some of them out of business, in order to generate 356 units for which there will be a five-year waiting list immediately. So she's solving no problems with this, but creating even more. And there's nobody downtown doing the math. And I don't see anybody in the press or the media asking the question, what are you going to do with the $57 million or the $75 or the $150? No one is asking, you know, what is this really going to do?
Well, don't say no one is asking the questions. I think I've asked a lot of these questions.
Well, you have, and I think there's other folks asking, but like the Seattle Times is not wading into it and saying, excuse me, what are you going to do with the $75 million and how big of a solution is that going to be? Because the answer would be it's not going to solve any part of the problem. It's simply just going to get wasted and you know, thrown away down a rat hole.
Well, you and I have talked before about the economic illiteracy of the city council, and they are that. They are economic illiterates, but even worse, Roger, they are just doing the bidding of these major campaign funding donors that have said, hey, use this cause, use homelessness as a way to extract more money from the people. And it's, in my way, it's an evil way, not just to govern, but to treat the legitimate homeless people that we can and should help.
You're right, because they're basically saying there's someone going to be sleeping outside tonight who is struggling with mental illness and other issues. And they're saying, well, wait for 5 years and maybe we'll give you a unit. And the fact is they need help right now, and that system isn't working. The system that they already have that is already got funding, and they're gonna tax business and just throw more money into a rat hole. And you know, you're right; it isn't compassionate, and they can't even run their own meetings. I mean, the other night when you know the meeting fell apart, and Sally Bagshaw basically shut the meeting down, and then you know kicked the people out, and they came back, and they can't. The council is not functioning as an organization that can operate or run the city.
No,
we'd be better with an algorithm running it than those nine people.
Yeah, it's a rogue band of zealots running the city, and that's all it is. Well, you can see Roger's work at Forbes.com. He's the director of Seattle for Growth, and we'll keep the conversation going, and maybe us alone, Roger, but we'll keep illuminating the public on what's really going on here.
Yeah, keep asking, you know, what are you going to use it for? That's the thing that pokes holes in it. They have no idea.
Yeah, they do. They're going to give it to labor unions. That's what they're using it for. I know that. All right, Roger, good talking to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. See ya.
Roger Valdez, Smart Growth Seattle. That is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the news, and then one of the craziest traffic stops ever is part of our awesome audio coming up next. Hey, thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. If you are on the search for your business's next home, there's simply no hotter place in the country than downtown Seattle right now. I went on a tour with Emily at Industrious Office. It's an amazing workspace right on 6th and Lenora in the heart of all that Seattle has to offer. Visit industriousoffice.com/Cairo or call Emily to schedule a tour. Mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hey there, business owners. Isn't this great? You can listen to Dory anytime, anywhere. If you're listening, your customers probably are too, so you need to give me a call. I can help you out and get your business placed right here in this show. 206-726-6819. It's Tina Sorensen, the General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio.
Get the clock on the wall. It's that time of day when we like to count down our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
I saw the story about the Southwest Airlines, you know, engine that blew and the woman who was sucked out the window. My middle daughter our middle daughter, flew down to Arizona Wednesday night last week to join us for the second half of the week. And she was on Alaska. And she said the pilot gave an announcement and explained how their engines are maintained and that... And I said, was that creepy or was it reassuring? She said, it's a little of both. But yeah. It was the day out, and I guess everybody was talking at the airport about the Southwest Air flight.
Well, sure, and because they've now said, hey, certain airplanes that have had a certain number of cycles with these particular engines need to be inspected, and everyone's thinking about it, even though these things are still so rare. But that was just so horrific.
I watched a couple of interviews this morning with that woman's husband. I mean, it is, and we're going to play some of it for you here because he's a strong man. They have two little kids, a boy and a girl, 10 and 12 years old. And he told NBC News that his name is Michael Reardon, and his wife Jennifer is the one who was involved in this tragedy.
She is going to be with us forever, and everything we do as a family is going to be based on Jennifer Reardon.
And they talked about, or the son was there too.
She's an amazing mom.
An amazing mom. That was at the funeral. The dad says he's going to keep going because of their kids.
Their looks to me, their hugs to me are what my rock is. And without that, I don't know what I would do.
And they tried to ask him about the accident itself, but he's not ready to go there yet.
I have not been angry yet. I'm sure it's coming. I'm keeping my love for her in my heart. And I'm staying strong for my children. And I'm soaking in their looks to me.
And then he also, that was all NBC News. He talked to Good Morning America as well about their last words as husband and wife.
One of my most comforting things through all this is she called me that morning. She just called to check in on the day, what we were going to do that night when she got home. And we ended with, I love you, safe travels.
So it's always good. I mean, it's a tragic story, but if your last words with somebody are, I love you, that's a nice thing to be able to cling on to. And then he talked about the phone call he got after this horrible tragedy.
There was a chaplain from a hospital that called, and he's like, well, I'm from Philadelphia. I forgot the name of the hospital. And I said, well, my wife was flying to Chicago today, so you must be looking for somebody else. And he said, there was a plane that was diverted here. I'm going to have a doctor give you a call. And then the doctor called and said, I'm sorry, Michael, but we've done everything we can, and we couldn't save her. And I just dropped the phone and then just immediately switched to the second phone and third phone calls that I had to make, the worst ones of my life, to her father and her mother. And then trying to figure out how to tell the kids their mom wasn't coming home.
And here's what this dad wants his kids to remember about their mom.
Kind, loving, caring, and sharing. 100%. And that every decision we make is going to be based on that. When I have those four little eyes looking at me, thinking how we're going to get through, that's going to make me a better dad and a better husband and a better person.
Time, loving, caring, and sharing. I got tears in my eyes as I was watching this morning.
Do you see her as your guardian angel now?
Absolutely. She was before. She's been there since that day when I met when we were teenagers, and I just didn't know it, and now I do.
If you could talk to her today, what would you tell her?
I love you. I have no idea how I can do this without her, but because of her, I know I can. It's a love affair that will never end, and it won't, because no one can take her from my heart, no one can take her from our family.
Okay, sad story. Keep that family in your prayers. We're going to do Awesome Audio now. There was we played you most of the 8 minutes of this last hour. So if you want to hear the whole thing, go to our podcast, listen to our 1 o'clock hour. This is amazing. This is a port commissioner back in New Jersey.
This is the receipt. This goes on file.
Whoop. I've jumped hit the gun. She was a port commissioner back in New Jersey. Her daughter was the backseat passenger in a car driven by a 19, 20-year-old boy. It was pulled over because the license plate was obscured and the windows were too tinted. And this mom went racing to the traffic stop. Her kids are well along the way in college, early 20s. And she tried to pull rank on the cops, and the audio of this traffic stop is just unbelievable.
Number one.
This is your receipt. This goes on file.
Hi, I'm Karen Turner. I'm a resident.
There you go. It's fine. I don't need that.
Okay.
She's flashing some Port Authority ID like she's some public official here.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm here as a concerned citizen and friend of the mayor.
and been in Santa Fe for 20 years. I take full responsibility for them. And what is the reason they were pulled over?
The driver has all the information. He'll tell you.
No. I need to know.
And the cop says, you don't have anything to do with this. Your daughter's not being cited. She was a passenger in the car. We're towing the car. If you want to ask the kid, we told him why his car's getting towed.
Don't need to know.
Okay.
We're not involved here. You're picking them up.
No. I'm involved. I'm not going to tell you.
He's the driver of the automobile. He's over 18.
I'm involved. I need to know. This is, she was a Hillary Clinton finance person, a Democratic Party official, and a $225,000 a year port commissioner.
Are you a commissioner?
I am a commissioner. One of the commissioners, and I'm heading up.
Do you have an ID with that?
That is my ID, and that is my business card. I am the commissioner of the Port Authority, and I'm heading up over 4,000 people. So, if there's a problem, I think I have...
There's no problem.
Well, I think there's a problem.
It's an unregistered vehicle.
Okay. Let's hear, why were they pulled over, first of all?
Miss.
Now, don't call me Miss. I'm Commissioner.
Don't call me Miss. I'm Commissioner. You got to hear the whole thing. We got it up on our podcast from the 1 o'clock hour today. Today's sign is next. Down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. I don't know why. I was fired up today. I'm passionate. You know, the more I see what's happening around here, the more passionate I get. I am not, I told you this yesterday, I am not going to throw up my hands at the region slipping away. Okay, with that as mere prelude, it is time for today's edition of...
Today's sign that the end is near.
I haven't had a chance to talk about this yet. A couple days ago, brand new survey came out. A record number of people in Washington State are not religious. There's a brand new Gallup poll. 47% of adults in Washington say they are not religious and seldom or never attend services. We are one of the most unchurched states in the United States of America. And I'm certainly not going to sit here and proselytize. I do not hide my Christian faith, but I don't use my radio show to try to convert people, to proselytize to them. I have other ways to display and exhibit my faith outside of this radio show. I will tell you, it's an issue that I've thought about a lot. As you might imagine, if you listen to this show, you know that I rarely take things at face value, and I am a very skeptical person about an awful lot of things, and I have never taken faith for granted. But after an inordinate amount of time and thought and study, I do believe in prayer and in heaven, and I do believe that Jesus Christ is the pathway and all of that, but I'm not going to proselytize to you. But it is not something that I just accepted at face value because I grew up in a Lutheran church in Ballard and have never thought about it since then. And you know, I've had some great conversations with people who are atheists, agnostic, and believers. And often the question comes up, why? Why do you believe? Why do you believe what you believe? And for me, it comes down to one word. I'll get to that word in just a moment. One thing I will note is it's interesting. Like the Seattle Times did a story about this Gallup poll that we're one of the most unchurched regions in the country. And the number of non-believers, atheists, who get in the comments, and they always talk about the Sky Fairy. Ooh, that's so clever. So clever to always refer in every one of the comments about stories like this to the Sky Fairy. Nobody's ever done that before. Really unique. No, people, just like I don't condemn people who think differently from me on these issues. You know, if you're atheist or agnostic, I assume you've given it as much thought as I have my faith, and you've arrived at a different conclusion. And I understand that. Believe me,
I had to consider all of those skeptical things when I was thinking through all of this. But then the question comes down to, so why? Well, if you think it's ridiculous that Christians believe, as you condescendingly say, in the sky fairy, for me, honestly, it is even more outrageous to think about a bunch of dust and matter swirling in an empty universe and then coalescing in the Big Bang. And among all of those stars and planets that spit out of the Big Bang, here we sit. And the one word that led me to conclude that this was guided by a much greater hand than any of us, love. I know, sounds weird coming from me, right? But the love I have for my wife, the love I have for my daughters, the love you have for your family, the love our dogs have for us when we come home at the end of the day and all they want to do is lick us and kiss us and love us. Love. I find it impossible. Impossible to think that love came out of the Big Bang. That makes less sense to me that this was an accident than the sky fairy makes to the atheist. Nature is very utilitarian, and nature optimizes for efficiency. Love doesn't. Here we are at the top of the intellectual and food chain and all of that, and we don't optimize because we let love and emotion get in the way. That doesn't make any sense to me. And that's one of many, many reasons. But for me, that is the prevailing reason. So we are one of the most unchurched states in the country. We have more people who are not believers than ever before here in Washington. And if you're on that list, I'm cool with you. You've arrived at a different conclusion than me. But that's why I came to my conclusion. All right, and finally in today's sign,
Conjunction, Junction, what's your function?
Hooking up words and phrases and clauses.
I gotta tell you, it's amazing how sticky in our brains, if you're anywhere near my age, Schoolhouse Rock is in these songs. And Bob Dorough, who was a pianist and singer, he performed with great jazz artists, Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, but he was best known when ABC came to him in the early 70s and said, can you come up with some songs for a new feature we're doing for kids called Schoolhouse Rock? And it was a way for kids to learn about things like grammar and numbers and government.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Oh, that puts me in front of our black and white TV right there. His mission was, don't write down to children, compose the song with integrity. And it is amazing how for kids, if we were respected and if we knew we were not being written down to, that we paid attention to this stuff.
Three is a magic number. Yes, it is. It's a magic number. Somewhere in the ancient mystic trinity.
Listen to this. Guys singing about the Trinity to teach kids about numbers. I guess I just brought this segment full circle with that. Bob Dorough, 94 years old, a legacy of memories with Schoolhouse Rock. That's going to do it for us. I've said everything that I have to say.
for today. But I'm going to think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's show. Ron and Don's coming up next, and I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon.
Don't have to guess. When it's three, you can see it's a magic number. A man and a woman had a little baby. Yes, they did.
Finished.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.